Hey Paul, good evening.
Hi, good evening.
How
Nice
are
to have
you?
you on the call. So, yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey Mo.
Hey, Paul. Hi, Sahil.
Hey, Mo,
Hi
how are you?
Mo.
Good, thanks. How are you guys going?
All good, all
Yeah,
good.
all good.
Glad to hear it.
So, Mo, I think let's start. It's an interesting topic that we wanted to have a chat on today. And continuing from our last call, which was also quite interesting, we thought we will take it one step further, from life in a simulation to actually more of stuff which has inspired a lot of science fiction. So, black holes and wormholes. Now, obviously, these two are some of the most fascinating and mysterious concepts, one of which has been proven and is has been even photographed today. And we are looking at these things which have pretty much inspired a lot of science fiction and a lot of fantasy around in our entertainment world today. And it's interesting to see what is the science behind some of them and how we've how these actually happened to come into existence in our consciousness and in terms of discoveries and mainly just theorizing. And what's up for us to figure out about these things as time goes on. So Sahil has joined us. He's our Cosmofluencer. So let's see what he has, and this is a topic of interest for him. So I'd love to know a little more about these things from his point of view. So Sahil, over to you. I think why don't you just introduce what these two concepts and two objects are to us, so that in as simple words as possible, so that we all understand what it is. Yeah.
So Paul, do you remember when we had an interview with this regarding a Cosmo influencer at that time? So the first thing you said was like we have to make a general public know what the astronomy consists of, what are the like there are so many fascinating things which are around our universe. So the first thing you told me was we have to make the general public know what the image which was put forth by NASA was, what that image shows. Like we have to know what actually that thing is. Now like today we will having a chat on that particular thing, like how that thing is going to be and how that was formed, like a black hole. So first of all, we the main quote the main quotation about how the black hole how black hole was denoted was like it has no hairs, right? It has no hairs. Wherever we'll see about black holes, we never know what actually is happening. What actually could happen is has been put forth by many scientists. So the black hole is nothing but the dead star. It was discovered like every planet, every star, every planet, every object in this universe had a escape velocity, right? So a long time ago, a hundred years ago, a scientist was just studying like there might be a star or something which could be having a escape velocity more than a light, the more than the speed of light. So that is how we came to know about like it was only a star. We were thinking it is a star which is after death. Which is after death is stretching like pulling all the lights, whichever light it reflects, it radiates, it gets it's not getting escape. So the escape velocity of that dead star is more than the speed of light. So that is how we get got to know about the black hole. There is a huge black huge dark in the middle of the universe, in the middle of the galaxies, whose escape velocity is more than the light, that even light cannot escape it. So and recently It was after 100 years, like the scientists are studying that thing from hundreds of years. And now, recently, we got to know about the three most popular thing that are the images of black holes. You know, that M87, which is in the Virgo cluster. And second, the Sagittarius A, which is in the center of our Milky Way galaxy. The M87 was the image of M87 was it was put forth in April 2019. In that image, if you'll see, we could see the theories and the concept which was studied by our scientists. We can see that theoretical things. So the first time when the image of M87 was we could easily see the technical things of black holes, like the direction of photons moving around it, how the thing is not letting that light to pass. So we can see multiple things, and the distance of this black hole M87 is around 55 million light years away from Earth. And secondly, the Sagittarius A, which was at the center of the Milky Way galaxy, it is just 2600 light years away from our Earth, right? If you'll know the scientists have detected the black hole recently, which was GAIABH1, right? That was the nearest black hole to our solar system. You have heard about it,
right? The Gaia, right? The Gaia BH1, yeah. Just happened.
Yeah.
So this is interesting, right? The point which you brought forward, and Mo, I'd want to pick your brains on this also. So when the image of M87 happened, right, and that was I think 2018, 2019. So it was one of those ultra cool moments in space exploration and just understanding. Absolutely. And astrophysics in general, because that image which came out, I remember watching the day before the image came out, there was a video which was put out by I think Veritasium or one of these YouTubers, where he broke down the concept of the black hole and tried to explain as to how that image would look like when it comes out tomorrow. And, he was pretty much bang on when it came to what the explanation was. But a few years before that, the movie Interstellar came out, which was pretty much everyone's first tryst with a black hole, physically.
The concept of
Mo, what was your, So Mo, what was your, moment there when you saw that image of the M87?
So, So I was actually in India at the time. I was actually at my in-laws' place. And I remember tuning in to the live webcast. They didn't have their TV connected, so like the entire family crowded around this iPad, and we're trying to watch it, right? And like, we're gonna see the black hole, and I think everyone was expecting to see something like Interstellar, like Gargantua or something like that. Right. And they're like, hey, like this wig, pinkish, reddish circle donut, what's the big deal, right? So again, it's a hard thing for people to imagine that, there are places in our universe that just swallow everything up and nothing can ever come out. I mean, that in itself it's hard for human beings to imagine. Like, what do you mean nothing can come out? I'm sure something must come out. Yeah, sure. Yeah, you get all kinds of radiation and stuff, but nothing that enters the maw of a black hole is going to escape it. Speaking specifically of Interstellar, though, the first time I saw the movie, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I'm like, nope, this isn't real. This isn't practical. It doesn't make any sense. And then I had to watch it again. And that's when, and the whole concept of the Tesseract actually pissed me off. I'm like, come on. But then I watched it again, and then I read up on it a bit more, and I'm like, ooh, fascinating. Very, very fascinating.
I can imagine the waves that went through your mind when that happened. Sahil, sorry. Over to you.
I'll tell you both something. The thing which will blow your mind, whatever we will do and what we are doing, the whole information is kept in that black hole, right? Which blow our mind is that black hole contains every information which our ancestor had did, we could still time travel through that black hole. And then there's concept came up of wormholes, right?
Well, yeah. So before going there, I just want to understand what that meant. So Sahil, what does that mean? I mean, all the information was stored in that black hole. So how does that, I mean, how does that manifest anywhere?
Yeah. So we all know Stephen Hawking, right?
Yeah.
So it was the time the recent. If you'll see, the scientists have proved that Hawking radiation, right? It's nothing but just the black hole contains the virtual particles. We know there is a virtual particle, and as the time passes, black hole evaporates its mass, right? It's every mass. So the Hawking radiation is nothing but at the horizon of that black hole, there is a pairing of coupling of particles, and one of the particle get into that black hole, and one the other particle gets apart. So that particle contains that particles which get apart from that other particle, it goes to infinity. So that that particles contains the information of the universe, right? So there's that that concept came up like that particle, the black holes, like there is a wormhole near the black holes. It was the first concept we got to know, like there is a bridge.
Stephen Hawking's work that postulated theorized wormholes. It was actually Einstein. This guy called Schwann, I believe, or something like that, who Schwann actually referred. Schwann, was it Schwann? 1916, I believe.
Oh yeah, okay. He had built on the general theory,
and then it was rediscovered by Einstein, and then of course, and then you have the Einstein Rosen bridge.
Yes.
Einstein.
You see, it's interesting how you know, science fiction has latched onto, you know, the concept of wormholes, because one, it's based on the work of a very respected and world famous scientist, Einstein, of course. And then, you know, when you look at the name Einstein-Rosen bridge, it just has a cool ring to it, right? The Einstein-Rosen bridge, the Bose-Einstein-Bose condensates, etc. And so here's the other thing, right? Science fiction writers and movie screenwriters, etc., they're very clever people. They understand that, you know, their audience, you know, has different levels of understanding. And so when they use the concept of the Einstein-Rosen bridge, if you've seen any of the Thor movies, that's essentially what the Bifrost is, according to movie lore. And so the reason why they picked that is because when you do the calculations for the Einstein-Rosen bridge, it actually allows you to create a sort of a coordinate system, which will allow you to target certain points in time that you could, in theory, travel to. Or if you were to take the case of Interstellar, where Kip Thorne, who was he's a physicist who was also one of the technical consultants for the movie, he gained the inspiration from the Tesseract from the idea of a traveler passing through an Einstein-Rosen bridge. Essentially, in the movie, there is a construct created by transcendental human beings who have evolved because of the mission that his daughter led in. If anyone's not seen the movie and I've ruined it for you, too bad. It's been out for
years. It's too late.
It's too late.
You can use a wormhole, I suppose, to go back in time.
Exactly. You can go back in time. You're welcome to use the Tesseract and do some ghostly stuff and get your way.
But that was actually quite fascinating, because that movie had brought in two concepts, right? One was the whole, black hole. I remember there was an interview of Dr. Thorne after that movie, and he had a lot of, he has done a lot of work on black holes. And when he saw that, his mathematical equations did not have, there wasn't any computing power that could actually simulate those equations. And when he saw the manifestation of the black hole, which is based on his calculation, his work, with, you know, the money power of Hollywood behind it, that was the first time he had seen his calculations and his formulas actually visualized. And he had actually mentioned that in an interview. So that was a big deal for him. Forget the rest of us. The black hole, the image of that, and ultimately you see the image of Gargantua is pretty much you blur it out and you'll see what M87 was, right? Or even exactly. For that matter, Sagittarius A star is. So there was that. And then there was the concept of the wormhole, which was, you know, that spherical thing which opens up near Saturn, which transports them to the other star system and so
but
on.
But you know what? What is the simplest way to describe a wormhole to someone who has no idea?
Yeah, we have
they
saw that
in the movie very well.
Yeah.
So it was Interstellar, and I think the first time I saw it, that was this movie called Event Horizon.
Event Horizon, yes. It was a ripoff from Event Horizon.
Crap movie, but such a good movie. But essentially, the idea is that, you know, if you were to imagine the entire universe to be a size of an A4 sheet of paper, roughly, right? And then you wanted to go from point A to point B. So what would be the easiest way or the quickest way to go there? So one, you could try to draw a line and you could say that, yeah, that's the closest thing. But you have to understand that space is also curved. Or it can curve, or it does curve because of gravitation, etc. So if that were the case, then if you had two points of gravitation strong enough that you actually bend space and time, so they actually come close together, and you punch a hole through it, and that's essentially a wormhole. And that's the weird nature about the fabric of space and time, because it doesn't just exist in one flat dimension or two dimensions. It's actually in three and fourth dimension being time. So
right, yes, yeah.
Yeah,
and the whole equivalence, right? So you have, in that example which you gave, so you're talking about a hole from one part of the paper to the other, which is a circular hole, which was, you know, you add a dimension to it to make it what a wormhole is, and that's why the wormhole entrance in Interstellar was spherical, which is like one dimension above a circle. So those kind of
And you would probably expect to see it look like a lens, like a bubble or something like that.
Correct. Right? Yeah, with some distortion there, right?
Exactly.
It's a bubble, right? So, yeah. So Sahil, can you tell us about? Yeah. I mean, what you have read about wormholes and what is the kind of? I mean, it's speculative, right? It's purely science fiction today, but we don't know. Like most discoveries, right? Historically, what's happened is, you see something, you observe something, and then you figure out that this is what the nature of this is, right? So that's how discovery has been throughout history. And then you had, I think the first speculative discovery was possibly a lot of the elements of the periodic table, where Mendeleev had said that there should be some element here because it should be, you know, in sequence. And a lot of them were discovered much later. Yeah. Similarly, your black holes also, right? They were conceptualized way before they were even, detected or visualized. That happened now. Similarly, we are at a stage of the wormhole story, the Einstein-Rosen-Bridge story, where it is a theoretical construct and it's speculative today, but who knows, maybe in 50 years time there would be people discovering it, and 100 years time people photographing it. So I don't know. So what is happening on that sphere of life right now?
Paul, I'll tell you one thing. The first problem which arises by studying that everything about wormhole, the first problem arises is the problem of size. Right. Mm-hmm. The size problem, the wormhole size is the first problem which was studied by the scientists years ago. And they have predicted that there could be a less chance to find something like that, because the second problem which arise after studying about black hole was stability. The wormhole, the existence of wormhole is not stable. It needs an exotic matters. Right. In order to stabilize, it needs exotic matter. Exotic matters are not dark matter and all. It is something different. Like the wormhole needs. It is a negative type of particle. Right. You might have heard about it. So wormholes needs exotic matter to stabilize. Like right. So there are. This is the two problems which are not letting us to detect any wormholes.
So then does it make sense to say that, you know, detecting those items would be the proxy for detecting the existence of a wormhole?
Yeah, it could not be detected.
Concept behind a black hole, right? Because you said light cannot escape a black hole. So you cannot see a black hole. So what you need to do is find where, you know, light is, there are... there are actually, you know, some disruptions in the flow of light or something, some anomalies which can be visualized. And they started, you know, basically conceptualizing what the surroundings of a black hole would be. And therefore, with that, you started detecting black holes. Is this the kind of a proxy for detecting a wormhole, if at all that happens? I don't know, in our lifetime.
Yeah, we have seen the images of black hole because the concept, the things which make black holes is possible. But the detecting wormhole is not far possible. Like it needs stabilizations and all. So I'll tell you one thing. Like there is a concept that like NASA has put forth about interstellar missions. Right. I'll tell you one the missions which is called as Black Hole Starship. We know that we could travel from one place to another with the help of wormhole, right? Or either black hole. But we could use that black hole, the concept relating to Hawking radiation. The scientists have simulated a synthetic black hole in lab with the help of that Hawking radiation. So same the same concept applies to black hole starship. It is a futuristic idea for interstellar travel. So basically, what happened in this starship? It will concentrate a huge amount of energy at a single point. You know, have you heard about the Dyson sphere? Dyson sphere, which concentrated all the energy of the solar thing, like if we'll we of could constant yeah of a star or with the it will concentrate all the energy at a point. So same with that concept, by putting it in to that black hole starship, we could create a small black hole. It consists of three major components, that starship, the black hole, the reflector, and the payloads, right? So it will create a black hole which will reflect. With the help of that reflection, it will accelerate the star, accelerate that spaceship, right? So by creating a micro black hole with the help of that Dyson sphere, by concentrating a energy, we could travel through the interstellar, between the stars, throughout the universe.
But would that be linear or would it be through a fourth dimension? Because the concept, I have heard of this, but I don't know the details of a black hole starship. And this is again, I think it was Arthur C. Clarke, right, who had conceptualized this or presented it first or something.
It would be what Hollywood loves to call a gravity drive. Even if you look at what Star Trek Gene Roddenberry's universe conceptualized, you know, like the warp drive, it's warp essentially drive, a gravity drive as well. And so the idea over there is, again, you've got the main deflector towards the front of, you know, the nacelle of a starship. And then obviously you've got the, you know, the warp nacelles on the sides. And the idea there, and they keep talking about it, is the warp drive essentially generates a warp field. And what is a warp field? It's essentially, you know, exotic matter and that sort of stuff. And the way that the starship is propelling itself forward is by essentially creating an instantaneous wormhole in an instantaneous point in time, right? And so coordinates and whatever that they're putting for interstellar and astro navigation is essentially, you know, coordinates along the Einstein-Rosen bridge. You know, again, the problem is, and it's theoretically possible, you could do it. The problem is energy, because it costs a lot of energy to be able to generate and maintain that sort of a field to accelerate a vehicle through space and time. Right. And it also works around the problem of faster than light travel, because unfortunately that's the problem, right? Like, you cannot go faster than the speed of light. If you're going faster than the speed of light, you're breaking the laws of the universe. So Star Trek and, you know, these kind of interstellar travel movies, they cleverly work around this problem by, you know, creating these sort of warp fields and stuff, which allow the spaceship to be subluminal. That is to say, because you're inside this wormhole, you're traveling lower than the speed of light. But because you're inside this wormhole, you're actually traveling faster than the speed of light, relatively speaking. Right?
Correct.
Yeah.
But the one thing that Star Trek glosses over very conveniently is time dilation.
Yeah.
you know, they're traveling hundreds of light years instantaneously, yet, you know, people on the other side of the galaxy in different quadrants aren't aging as
fast.
We
all age the same. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where Interstellar was is more realistic in the sense that, you know, when they went to Miller's planet, every second they spent there, it was like 8 years had passed on Earth, or every minute or every hour or something like that. So ultimately, you know, they come back after a few hours and 80 years has passed.
Hmm. Yeah.
So...
It directly links with that. If we are traveling through black hole, so it directly says that there is a white hole, right?
Theoretically, there should be one.
There should be a white hole from which nothing could go in. If we'll see the black hole's concept is nothing could go out. So the same, the opposite goes with white holes. If we travel
to black
hole,
today.
Which would be the exit for, you know, but then,
the
you know, like,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, you know, again, being, you know, a bit of a dreamer myself, you know, I try to put this in terms with holy scriptures and things like that, you know. And then, you know, you can start to see some patterns, you know, like, ooh, okay, so there's a place called hell that people go to and never come out of. It sounds a lot like a black hole.
That's a nice analogy.
You know, so, and then the white hole is essentially the place where you'll end up, you know, because, you know, you get flung out into another universe or something.
You can't get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you see, the other thing is, again, like, it's theoretical stuff, but then, okay, if there is such a thing as a white hole, that means it should be blazing hot. It should be radiating heaps of energy, and it should be
It should be everything that a black hole isn't, right?
Exactly, yes. Yeah. But and so the only thing that exists in the universe, as far as I know, that is sort of like that would be the stars, or would be the other exotic remnants of stars, you know, like magnetars and whatnot. But
yeah, quasars and stuff, yeah.
Quasars, yeah. But we're not actually, you know, getting any information out of it. And whatever gets sucked into a black hole is essentially, you know, stretched and pulled and then superheated. And so the chances of it retaining any of its original properties at the end of that are remote to none. Unless, you know, some supercomputing technology in the future is able to decode it. I don't think that's going to happen in our lifetime.
No, and the other thing, right? Because a lot of these learnings, which you know, we want to actually determine whether they are true. A lot of these theories, I mean, everything right down to spaghettification in a black hole, right? It's something we need to physically experiment for ourselves, and that's not happening till we actually you know, solve the problem of time travel. So it's kind of
look. I reckon we should probably get human beings back on the moon first and get them living there first before we can even consider these possibilities. There's that, and then of course, you know. It's also the aspect of, well, you don't want a mission to last generations as well, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to burden the grandchildren with fulfilling grandpa's dream.
Correct. Yeah. That's the fundamental problem. You know, inherited.
It finally makes us sad. Like, we have at childhood, we all have a dream, like traveling through black holes and wormholes. And when we get to know that it's hard to detect everything and to go there, it's something not impossible, but it's like that for today's technology. So it makes us sad.
Yeah.
No, but I think it boils down to that, right? Whether it's an engineering problem or whether it's actually a theoretical problem. Because if it's a theoretical problem, then we have to actually come up with a theory to solve it. And if it's an engineering problem, we just need better computation. We need better technology. And that's a matter of time. We can predict that to a certain extent, at least. But I think...
Paul. I was just going to say that I really think that if human beings were to crack fusion... And, you know, actually be able to miniaturize that technology, I reckon we would solve a lot of our problems. And this would actually pave the way to more exotic sources of energy and forms of energy and materials. And, you know, the kinds of things we will be able to manufacture on a large scale that we can't right now because the sheer economics of the energy are just so ridiculous.
That comes back to your point of going and settling on the moon first, right? Because that's where all the helium-3 is.
Yeah.
So
exactly. I mean, that's one
problem. That's your first step to solving a problem of fusion. So that's interesting.
Yes.
I think that's another conversation we should have sometime. You know, the whole fusion and, you know, energy use for... How would that problem be circumvented in fiction, science fiction? Whether it is Project Hail Mary or Star Trek.
Procrastinating about... prognosticating about... what amazing things human beings could accomplish if you had a fusion reactor for every city. I mean, man, global warming wouldn't even be an issue. Like, we would be able to run climate scale air conditioners with impunity.
Right. Yeah. And we don't even need a Dyson sphere to conquer this. Yeah.
I mean, we would be able to literally suck carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases straight out of the atmosphere using wasteful electrical processes because we have unlimited energy now.
It will, studying about everything will lead, if we'll think beyond a certain limit, our brain could go into black hole. Right.
This is a good conversation, Sahil. Thanks for this. Thanks, Mo. Yeah. Let's connect again on this.
Thanks, Mo. Thanks, Paul.
See you guys.
Yeah.